Hello there, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Dino, Dave DiNatale in for Jason Gibbs today, and we do have a big show. If Gibbs were here, we would call it loaded, but it is a big show today.
Loaded show.
We're kicking things off with Hall of Famer Bill Polian, and I'm very excited to see what Bill Polian thinks about what the Browns have done this offseason. We've got some good questions lined up for him. He joins us right away here in a couple of minutes. Also, Paul Bazier from PredictionMachine.com, who gave the Browns the best draft grade of the 2016 draft. He joins us at 2 o'clock. But before we get into anything, I just have to ask you one question, Matt Wilhelm, and you as well, Dino. Did you see Steph Curry in overtime last night?
No.
Have you seen the highlights?
No. I know what he did. I didn't see the highlights or watch it.
Redonkulous.
17 points.
17 points.
In overtime.
Most ever in any game in the history of the NBA. In overtime by one player.
17 points?
Yeah.
Is the most in an overtime by two teams combined.
By one player.
Okay. That's what I was trying. I was getting to clarify that.
Yeah. So he set the record for most individual points in an overtime of any game in the history of the National Basketball Association. On fire.
He's screaming, I'm back.
I like it. I think it adds some intrigue. It seemed like people were down on the Warriors and everybody was all in on the Cavs now. And now it gives some intrigue again. I liked it. It was a pretty amazing performance all in all. I want to let you guys know that tomorrow we will be joined on the show by Danny Shelton. That's right. Number 55, the Browns' second-year player. Very excited to hear what he has to say as he heads into his second season. That's tomorrow. But again, today we're going to kick things off with Bill Polian, Hall of Famer, ESPN NFL insider, GM who was responsible really for the Peyton Manning dynasty there in Indianapolis, made the Bills that great team that went to four straight Super Bowls. Of course, the Carolina Panthers turned them all into winners. And he was strong about his opinions about the Browns offseason. I'm curious to see what he thought of their draft plan, the execution, and we'll certainly kick off with that here momentarily today on Browns Daily. A lot, and, you know, it's an exciting time now. It's starting to get a little bit of buzz again back in the building. It was like a little bit of a lull yesterday. The buzz is back, though. The rookies are going to be reporting here in 2 days.
Yeah, the Suburban should be making many trips to Burke Lakefront Airport or, you know, the airport here and picking these players up and bringing them in from regardless of where they come from. They're all making their way to Cleveland. They should get picked up, brought into the facility. As we found out today, a lot of them have numbers been given to them. So you can put a face or, a player to a number and a face to a number now. And it's becoming more like football. And I think as these guys dive into their playbooks, and I found it very interesting to read. ESPN.com had a article about the rookie minicamps have already happened. And the expectations on these rookies and what kind of happens to these rookies during a rookie minicamp. And it was just focusing on the playbook that they knew in college for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and learning the textbook size playbook that they'll have to learn in the National Football League and being able to digest what you learn Thursday night and perform it on Friday morning and what you learn on Friday throughout the rest of the day and so on and so forth the next day in practice. And then I thought this was a very valid point, and I recall this to a certain extent, was your conditioning level. Because the tempo of practice without the full number of players, these coaches want to see what type of shape you're in. They want to see what you can handle both mentally and physically. So they're going to test your mind with the playbook, and then they were actually going to continue to test your mind when you are stressed through condition, through the tempo, through the exertion that happens on the practice field, and your ability to retain information and perform under that stress. Because, and it's such a great point, so much of what goes into your offseason once you graduate or declare for the draft is combine prep, pro day. So your conditioning, your position conditioning, but your overall conditioning is so focused on fast 40, vertical, broad jump, short shuttle, short here, that when you're doing 2 hours worth of work, all football specific, I mean, it's significant. And that's why don't be surprised if there's some buckets out on the field for guys to dive their heads into and throw up.
Not to mention the guys that were invited to the draft. You're doing kind of the circuit, the award. Yeah, a little bit of schmoozing, a little bit of you know, things of this nature. By the way, for the numbers, here are the rookie numbers. I've retweeted them from Dan Murphy, Browns PR, but here are the numbers. Corey Coleman, 19. Emmanuel Ogba, 90. Carl Nassib, 94. Sean Coleman, 72. Code Orange, Cody Kessler, number 5. Joe the Show, Schobert, 53. Ricardo Lewis, 80. Derek Kindred, 30. Seth the Valve does get number 87, which he wore in college in honor of Gronk. Jordan Payton, 84. Spencer Drango, 66. Hollywood Higgins, 81. Trey Caldwell, 31. And Scooby Wright will wear number 50.
Now, I like that picture. I like that number for Scooby.
I do, too. And these are all subject to change, by the
way.
And I think as the roster shakes itself out, you will see some of these guys' numbers ultimately change.
But some of the guys will just grow into the number. And because you are limited in the National Football League by the numbers that you can wear.
Yeah, by position.
Linebackers are 40s and 50s. Defensive lines are what, 90s?
Yeah.
Receivers are teens and 80s.
Defensive linemen can obviously be in the 50s, I think, or the 60s.
Okay, 50s. Yeah, you're okay. That's offensive.
Or 70s. 50s, 60s, 70s, and 90s, right?
Yeah. Because receivers are teens
or
and
80s. Yep.
Running backs are 20s and 30s.
Yep.
Tight ends are 40s.
Can a fullback still be in the 40s? Yeah. Isn't Malcolm Johnson?
Yeah. So fullbacks, tight ends are 40s and 80s.
80s.
Right? Single digits are special team players.
That's it. Quarterbacks.
And quarterbacks. Cody Kessler, 5.
Interesting choice. What did he wear in college?
I think he was double digit. Was he 10 or 11? Those are the two that I think of.
I'll have to look. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
I like it. It's a good number. The numbers are always fun. It's fun to see. Danny Shelton, by the way, very happy to be back at number 55 himself. That's something that he certainly is looking forward to as well this season. Now that Alex Mack has moved on, it's his opportunity there. Cody Kessler, I'm not sure of his number. Was he number 6? Number 6.
Okay. Not far off.
No. Just one.
But it's a big moment.
Sure, getting your number.
When you get your number, and then you actually walk into the locker room and see.
So you couldn't be 35. You could not be your collegiate number. So you had to start over.
Got it.
All right. We're going to go to the hotline now, though, and kick off our show in grand fashion with Hall of Famer Bill Polian. Bill, thank you so much for being with us here on CBD.
Glad to do it.
All right, let's get right into it. I know you were critical of the offseason that the Browns had, letting so many players go via free agency. What did you think, though, of the draft and the execution of the plan from Sashi Brown and company?
Well, actually, I wasn't critical. I was puzzled by it, to be very honest with you.
Yes.
And I'm still, to some degree, puzzled by the draft. And where I come out is that I want to see what this team looks like in September when you get to the final 53, because right now it's very hard to make a determination as to what this team is or is not. You don't know who's going to play, who's going to be in the lineup, what positions they're going to be playing,
sure,
et cetera. So I'm very open-minded at this point. I can't wait to see them in September.
Bill, Hugh Jackson was sought out by the Cleveland Browns. They make him the head football coach. He wanted to be a head football coach, and he starts his process. How many wins does a mind like Hugh Jackson give you from one season to the next, if in fact the Browns are starting from ground zero?
Zero. You know, it's all about player personnel. And when you're in a rebuild mode like this, and so he has to get to know his personnel. He has to get to know how they fit. He has to rejigger his system with the personnel he has. Make adjustments for the personnel that he has, and then, you know, about halfway through the season, you'll get a read on how they look and how they fit, and then you hope that the arrow goes up from there. But this is, to use the modern term, a reboot.
Sure.
And the screen is blank at this stage.
Talking with Hall of Famer, NFL insider Bill Polian. Bill, when you look at the draft going into it, the Browns were set to have 10 picks, which is a lot. They come out of it with 14 players, a 15th acquired in a 7th round trade, a future 1, and 2 future 2s. From that level, when you look at it, what did that make you think about the plan or the vision that the Browns are trying to implement?
Well, the future 1 and the 2s are valuable picks because that's where you get your premier players.
Right.
Those are the guys who are going to be your bell cows, the people who are difference makers. And so while there wasn't, I don't know that Coleman necessarily will be a difference maker. We'll find out. But that's where the quarterback's going to have to come from. If it isn't Robert Griffin III, that's where the defensive difference makers are going to have to come from. So in that sense, it was a good move. We'll see what happens in the execution. Obviously, it's one thing to have the picks; it's another to use them wisely.
Bill, you talk about the quarterback position, and obviously, you know, with your successful stints around the National Football League, how important it is to have that premier quarterback. Whether it's Peyton Manning, whether it's Jim Kelly, you had said in 2015 you would have taken a long, hard look at RG3. The Browns did; they signed him. What do you think of that move, and what must he do to become successful long-term in the NFL?
Well, the first thing he has to do is stay healthy, and yep. That's going to mean a change in style when he runs. He's got to be in a position where he does not expose himself unnecessarily to injury. The injury that he originally incurred in Washington could have been avoided had he simply gone out of bounds and avoided the hit. So he has to change that. Otherwise, there won't be a career. The question would be, how do you fit the offense to his unique skill set? I've come to the conclusion that with any spread quarterback, particularly one who comes from Baylor, which is pure, unadulterated spread, you're probably barking up the wrong tree to try to make them pure pocket passers. That's probably too big a conversion to make. But a quarterback who's on the move with boots, with waggles, with a good solid West Coast short passing game, which Hugh had in Cincinnati, that makes sense. And he can do those things and do them well. So he's got the skill set to fit. Hugh has the experience to tweak the system to help him fit. But the most important thing he has to do is stay healthy.
And Bill, walk us through, as a former general manager, when a regime changes, walk us through the evaluation process of the current roster, the current contracts, as you do take on, you know, a new feeling or new culture in that city.
Well, contracts are meaningless in a sense because everybody's under the same salary cap. The only question with contract is the player performing to the level of compensation that he's getting? If he's not, then you have to do something with the contract or move him on. The bottom line is that contracts are very secondary. That's especially true if you don't pay the quarterback, because that means you have relatively large amounts of cap space to work with. The evaluation of the players is critical. Who can play in the league and be competitive? Who can play in the league and be competitive at a high level? Who do you have who can help you win championships? Those are the three evaluations that you have to make. And that's all done via tape, with the coaches and some input from the personnel people. But the coaches understand the system best, and they have to figure out where to put each individual player within the system. So those are the most important evaluations that have to be made, and they're still ongoing. Coaches have seen the players on the field for the first time. They'll see them in training camp. They'll see them in the preseason, and then they'll cut the squad to 53. And as I said at the outset, we'll know in September what this team looks like.
Bill, I know you need to run, so last question, and you can be brief in your answer. How long does it take to see if this turnaround is going in the right direction? In other words, for Browns fans, when can they hope to see some signs that, yes, this is working?
Probably from the middle of next season on.
Okay.
You probably get a first cut at whether or not they're headed in the right direction.
Bill, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it and the knowledge, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bill Polian, Hall of Fame general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Buffalo Bills, the architect of those Super Bowl teams, and of course the Bills going to four straight there under his tutelage in Buffalo. Our guest there talking about the Browns offseason as well. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. Your reaction to what you heard from Bill Polian, we'll talk about ours as well. 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, and Dino on CBD. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and Dino. Dino, your thoughts on Bill Polian there. I thought some interesting stuff that he had to say. Obviously, he certainly, much like Jason Gibbs from the Show Me State of Missouri, he wants to wait and see, which makes sense. But I thought it was very interesting that he said a coach means nothing.
Yeah, I wanted to sit there and go, Bill, so you're telling me Tony Dungy didn't mean anything? You know, when you got that Super Bowl in Indianapolis? I don't.
Marv Levy?
Right. I don't know if I am totally in agreement with that.
Right.
I mean, you know, far be it from me, Matt, to disagree with the Hall of Famer. But right. I mean, I found that very shocking.
The premise behind my question was simply coming when everyone feels a city, an owner, and management feels like they got the right guy for the next 5 years, that equates to something in value.
There's no doubt.
And for him to say zero, that's like saying, you know.
I think what he was trying to say, because he said it's all about player personnel. So I think he said it doesn't matter how great your coach is. You're not going to win a Super Bowl unless you have the right player. So maybe on a Super Bowl level.
If we're talking on a Super Bowl level, yes.
Right.
But what we're looking at
is looking for improvement here in Cleveland, right?
Correct.
Let's relax, Bill.
We had three last year. Give me five.
Right.
Give me six.
Is he
worth a win and a half? Is he? And I think the greatest take, and who was it that said it, is last year we were expensive, old, and experienced, and we got three wins.
And underperformed.
Mm-hmm. And now we're young, we're hungry, and well-coached. With less talent.
You've been in a locker room. You know that means something.
Right. It just, there's something about being young and hungry and really wanting to right a lot of wrongs.
Right. The best case is that you have a combination of young and hungry, experienced, and productive.
Correct.
And a franchise quarterback and a great coach, and then you could go win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
So maybe that's what he means. You can't even worry about
Super Bowl until you get that conversation, right? Maybe that conversation with Bill Polian just was like, his way of thinking is so far ahead. That's a 2018 guest. You know, where we're knocking on the door. We're one player away. We're two. You know, I don't know. $30 million contract guys, those swings at the plate via free agency, from competing for a Super Bowl. Then you go get Bill Polian and ask him those questions, because that's the world he lived in.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't competing to win the division. It was keeping us winning the division and competing for a Super Bowl.
Well, the one time that he was downtrodden was when he was in Indianapolis and they had the number one overall pick, and he picked correctly Peyton Manning over Ryan Leaf, which is probably the difference between him being in Canton and not. But
yeah,
I think his point was interesting. I know that he's a believer in RG3. I know he loved RG3 coming out of college and thought it was a very difficult decision to go between Andrew Luck and RG3. But if he can stay healthy, I think Bill Polian does believe RG3's got a shot. But what he pointed out is one of the things that the Browns did right in this draft is that Cody Kessler was Hugh Jackson's guy. They brought in RG3. So they threw two assets at the quarterback position that they feel pretty good about. Is it a surefire franchise quarterback? No, but was it Jared Goff? No, but the Rams stole him.
Right.
Bad Rams.
You're correct. So
Naughty Rams.
Is it safe to say that we know Cody Kessler's Hugh Jackson's pick? So we know that based on everything that we've heard, you know, out of the cow's mouth. I think it's safe to assume that the collaborative effort of Andrew Berry, Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson, Paul DePodesta brought us RG3. The collaboration brought us RG3, and Hugh Jackson, our head coach, brought us Cody Kessler.
Yeah. And listen, Hugh Jackson, I'm sure, was influential in RG3 because he said the ground moved under his feet when he saw him. And what he pointed out, though, is that the Browns, because of the trades, the two ones and the two twos next year, the two in 2018, are positioned to take more swings at that quarterback. And I wonder if the Browns would say to themselves, let's say next year the Browns end up with the number two pick again. And there is a guy. And the team at number one doesn't need a quarterback. Do the Browns, with all the capital they picked up, do they make that move next year, or will they never, ever do that?
That's a great question, and I want to throw this one back at you as you were giving me that. Create that same scenario, and RG3 has a 2012-ish kind of year in a Browns uniform, and you have the number two overall pick and a team at number one that doesn't need a quarterback, and you're primed to go take Deshaun Watson if need be at number two, or make a move up to number one to guarantee that no one jumps you so that a Jared Goff type of situation doesn't happen. But yet RG3 at 26, almost 27 years old, for the price that we're paying him, just played like the guy everyone thought he could play like.
Then I think you roll with it because you got Cody, who you drafted. Then I think you're good. Then you have an opportunity to add the best non-quarterback in the draft,
right,
and maybe two of the five, because I don't think the Eagles are going to be that great.
Two of ten.
We'll take it. I won't be greedy.
Right.
I won't be greedy.
I'll be realistic.
How are you feeling right now, Dino? Because it's good to get to have you and get your takes on this stuff, since we everybody gets to hear you with Hooli all the time.
Yes, yes.
What are you at with kind of the draft, what happened, the quarterback room, et cetera?
You know what? The fact that the Browns – my biggest fear going into the draft was that the Browns were going to trade down but trade back up, and you know, they – I love what they did. They went out and addressed so many needs with so many players and got assets for the future. And, you know, it was something just as subtle like getting a draft pick in 2018. You might say, well, what's the big deal about a second rounder in 2018? It goes to show that this regime is going to have an opportunity. At least for now, I think they've sold Jimmy Haslam and D. Haslam. Look, we need multiple years. This can't be a year or two and then it gets burned to the ground and start again. You got to give us time to do this. And I think they're going to have time to do this. I mean, I like Coleman, guys. I like, you know, I like the fact they addressed the pass rush. They got explosive type players. I think that was huge.
Yeah, I do like that. And the first two picks, explosive defensive player gets to the quarterback, explosive playmaker on the offensive side of the ball in Corey Coleman. And yes, the quarterback situation, you know, RG3, I always said it, so I'm happy that it played out this way, but this was my take on it. Carson Wentz is, there's nobody on the planet that can convince me, and granted, other 31 other NFL teams certainly felt this way, but nobody can convince me that you are better off taking a gamble on Carson Wentz than RG3. Like, I've seen RG3 be good in the National Football League. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I'd rather take a shot on RG3 for that I don't have to use a draft pick on.
Yes.
And turn that pick, which they did, into an extra one, two extra twos, not to mention the threes and the fours,
correct,
et cetera.
Not knowing when you'd have a chance to be that high again, or wanting to give up what the Eagles gave up to get up to get that guy.
Right, because in reality, when you look at it, you have to say to yourself that Carson, once that offer's on the table, you're saying that Carson Wentz is worth two number ones, two number twos, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. It was basically an extra one, two, and three.
For better or worse, I mean, don't you guys agree? For better or worse, this, you know, the performance of this draft, we'll look back at the draft 2016, will almost directly correlate to how Carson Wentz does. Don't you agree? In many ways.
Yes and no. If, for example, the guys they drafted end up being great, then no. And what the future picks. You know, when you look at that sum. Obviously, if Carson Wentz goes out there and does become Ben Roethlisberger, yes, the Browns could look back on it. But again, situations are different. Systems are different. You never know how things would have panned out in one situation versus the other. But, yes, you'll look at that. But if you do have a quarterback, and I'll say through 2018, from the extra assets you acquired, whether it's RG3, whether it's Kessler, whether it's somebody drafted in 2017 or somebody drafted in 2018, as long as you come away with a guy that you really believe is your franchise quarterback for the next 10 years, even if Wentz is, that's fine because you still got all this other stuff too.
Right.
You got to get the quarterback. And on top of the quarterback conversation, I wrote these things down because, yes, we lost good players. Mitchell Schwartz, Alex Mack, Tashaun Gibson, Dante Whitner. You know, we lost guys that contributed over the last couple years to Cleveland success, and there's, you know, part of our fan base wanted those guys to be retained, but they're not Browns anymore. And Sashi Brown set out to fill those voids. Cam Irving at center, Sean Coleman, Austin Pastore to compete for that right tackle position. We're getting playmakers. You've got Campbell. You've, you know, Raheem Moore, so on and so forth. Irrelevant to the quarterback position, irrelevant to positions of need. This is what, so far, what 2016, what needs to be accomplished for me to feel like we're taking a big step in the right direction. Whoever makes up our 53-man roster, not monster, need to learn how to
compete. It's going to be a monster.
Right. They need to understand what it means to compete every day. Yes. In the classroom, with themselves, with the guy behind them, with the standard that is created of what a winning level guy does on a daily basis that is playing their position in the National Football League. So compete. Secondly, 2016, I want to know that this team can be physical. I think Hugh Jackson brings that both mentally and physically and is going to demand that, as we heard or will hear from many players over the coming days as we get them here in the Dog Bowl. Physical, physical, physical. The weight room. Seeing that on the football field in practice, carrying it over into the game. Right? Tough. And this is not play like a Brown stuff, but tough. Toughness. Playing, are you injured or are you hurt? You know? And I'm not talking just about concussions, I know, because of the protocol, but how to be tough and physical go hand in hand, but yet they're different. And lastly is learning how to win. When you have a team on the ropes because you've competed for 57 minutes, because you've out-physicaled them, and you're mentally tough enough to put yourself in a situation to win a football game, that you do win that football game. Too many times we've been on the other side of it. We let people come in here. We play them tough. We're trying to be physical. We're sort of competitive. And they steal a win when it was in our grasp. Hugh Jackson's going to teach these
Arizona,
guys how to win.
Denver. Two great teams last year.
Correct. Playoff teams. Super Bowl winner. My goodness.
Champion.
Right?
Yeah.
Those, to me, are what 2016 is all about. It's not about RG3. It's not about Cam Irving. It's not about Paul Kruger and Emmanuel Ogba. If they take on these traits... The big bound, this is a step. The bound in 2017 will be significant with the quarterback in place, if he is in place, with the assets we have in the first and second round next year, with the guys, the 15 guys that we just added, along with undrafted free agents, getting a year of experience, and here it is again, with the trial by fire as rookies, going out and performing, learning on the run, making the mistakes, cleaning it up, learning how to be a pro, playing in the National Football League. 2017, to me, if they learn these lessons, is going to be a bound, not just a step in the right direction.
Right off the trampoline, let's go. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Off and rolling, Zagura, Wilhelm, Dino! Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Dino, Dave Nitatalli for Jason Gibbs. We're going to go to the phone. Speaking of Dino, we got Dino the Trucker with us. Dino.
Guys, how are we doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Fine. Hey, I wanted to bring up something which you guys brought up about the quarterbacks. I'll take 12 solid picks, 14 solid picks any day over a franchise so-called quarterback. Because really... You don't know really what you're going to get. I mean, I can go on, for example, with Manziel for one.
Well, he wasn't.
You know, I remember back when I was a kid, vaguely, I think we gave up Paul Warfield for a guy named Mike Phipps, who was a bust. So really, you know, look at what New England got. They got Tom Brady, who was a sixth-round choice. You know, I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, it's maybe analytics was involved in it. But I'd rather have the picks that we got right now. I'm so happy for what they did to get wide receivers. They addressed that problem. They addressed the problems on the defense. They gave us a quarterback, which I think is going to be a solid quarterback, with Hugh Jackson's tutelage. So, you know, you got RG3. I mean, give the kid a break. I mean, he really had one bad year, and they shut him down last year. So give the kid a break. He could have had bad coaching for all we know. We don't know these situations. But I really am curious to see RG3, how he's going to come out of it. And I think he's going to be successful at it. I think he's going to be a solid quarterback for this team.
I certainly hope so. And again, to me, Jared Goff was the only, as close to you can say, surefire franchise quarterback as can exist in this draft. And the Browns couldn't get him. So what they did made a heck of a lot of sense. And I think watching RG3's development with Hugh Jackson, watching Cody Kessler Those are going to be some of the biggest stories of the offseason, because for this team, until they have that guy, they are not going to get where we all want, which is Super Bowl. I know right now we're taking baby steps, and I'm all good with that, but to get where we all want to get eventually for this team, hoisting the Vince Lombardi trophy, they're going to need to have that quarterback.
Yeah, I think the more and more you discuss it, you have to enjoy the fact that we parlayed one pick into, I mean, a three-year stretch of picks that allow Sashi Brown, and Bill Polian said it best, you know, you've got to hit on the picks.
Absolutely.
I think mathematically, you know, you take a 40% hit rate over the next 3 years. So you're talking the 14 we had this year, next year we'll have at least 12, that's what, 26? And then say another 10, that's 36. A 40% hit rate is what? 3.6, 12 to 15 high-quality players.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah.
If you do that, you're changed.
I mean, 12 to 15 high-quality players. Other guys are going to make the team and be role players.
Sure.
And then you address free agency with the mentality that you take, you know, into the market every year.
That's what you certainly hope for. Let's go, Cam from Canada. Cam, how are you?
Doing great. You know, Polian kind of indicted himself there a little bit because he made two things part of his criteria: a great quarterback, which he had several years in both locations and only won once, and he also had great coaching in both locations, which he said is not necessarily a factor. So he said it's about personnel. So which one did he fail on? Obviously, he failed in that area of establishing personnel. And the other thing I wanted to say,
to be fair, I wouldn't call four straight Super Bowl appearances by the Bills, even though they didn't win one, I wouldn't call that a failure.
Yeah, but when you get an inch from the finish line and you can't close four straight times.
I hear you.
The second part I wanted to say was for him to say that the coach is not worth wins is asinine, because our situation, our coaching actually costs us games. So if you eliminate coaches that cost you games and bring in a coach that doesn't cost you games, there is some type of game there. And then the final thing is, if he's not going to define a criteria for what success looks like in this draft, like, please don't play silly bugger with me, Bill, or with us, and pretend that you can't evaluate a draft. He's covered his bases. Otherwise, he would have given us some criteria to establish what worth actually looks like in this draft. He was unable to do that. So I just think he played silly bugger with us. I don't think he made a lot of sense at all in that conversation. I really don't.
Well, thank you, Cam.
Thank you, Cam.
You've just put a Hall of Famer in his place.
That silly bugger.
I like it. Some good words, some good verbiage there from Cam, from north of the border for us as well. The cardiac kid, my good buddy Sean Spark, as he's changed his name to, always very clever, says, why don't we just get Tom Brady in the sixth round? I would love to get a Tom Brady in the sixth round.
Come on.
He's being facetious.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yes. But like, hey, happened once, may never happen again.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, the Tony Romos, the Kurt Warners, the Tom Bradys, that rarities.
They just happen.
Rarities.
That's not something you can try to do. They just happen.
And Tom Brady and Kurt Warner almost didn't happen in St. Louis. Just wait until you get your hands on Al Saunders' book. All the stories behind that, The Greatest Show on Turf. That's going to be good stuff when he ever writes that book. That guy's got stories. I can't wait till we get him on CBD. If I could, like, stand outside and do a picket, you know, and have a sign, like, get Al Saunders on CBD, I would. That's my number one goal. That's my goal of the year.
I'm just going to sit here and let you guys chat. I'll pop in every once in a while.
It'll be great. I hope we hear our voices not at all. Just let him do his thing. Guy can spin a yarn and knows just about everything there is to know about the National Football League. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Bob in Millersburg said it was going to call in, but didn't want to have to be on air calling Bill Polian a cotton-headed ninny muggins. Do you know what movie that's from?
I do not.
Cotton-headed Ninny Muggins? Dino?
No.
What? Oh, wow.
And I know movie. Boy.
The Elf.
Oh, yes.
Will Ferrell.
With Will Ferrell.
Yeah. The other elf called him, one of the actual elves called him a cotton-headed Ninny Muggins. He was very offended.
That's awesome.
It was sad.
I have to go back and watch.
That's a great movie.
I can't
Don't
say
roll your eyes at that. That's
say
a great
I've
movie.
I've never seen that movie from start to finish.
Wow.
I've watched it. I've seen the whole movie probably multiple times, but never in one sitting.
You're a Christmas guy and you have kids?
My kids aren't into the elf. They don't get the humor in the elf yet.
I mean, you've got to me Will Ferrell at the height of his powers in spandex. You have
Zooey
Deschanel, who was really new on this, burst on the scene. You have Jimmy Caan as the evil editor who like finally gets his heart warmed. The isn't Mary Steenburgen the wife? I think so.
Yeah. James Caan. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, Jimmy Caan.
I'm not discounting.
It's like the godfather of Christmas movies.
My kids are just they're Home Alone and The Christmas Story and the Grinch Stole How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Jim Carrey edition. That's what we're into.
You got to get them on the Elf.
They see it. I turn it on. I go, hey, good movie, because I know it to be a good movie, even though I've never watched it in its entirety. They want to go play.
Bob Millersburg points out Peter Dinklage is in it.
Now I'll watch it. Who's Peter Dinklage?
Oh, my God. Dino.
He
doesn't watch Game of Thrones. Watch Game of Thrones.
I can't.
Peter Dinklage?
I can't help you then.
Was he like a Pee Wee Herman sidekick point? I don't know.
He was in the last X-Men movie, too.
Who'd he play?
The bad guy.
Who? Professor X?
No.
Magneto?
Dinklage is one of the fine actors of our time.
And never heard of him.
You hadn't heard of Lemmy either.
Yeah, I know.
You have.
Now, hold on.
You have a lot
Your best friend is the kid. If I call we call the kid and I go, hey, who's Peter Dinklage? Is he going to go, oh, he's this guy. Been in this movie. No, probably not.
I
can tell by the look on your face.
I promise.
And he probably doesn't know who Lemmy is either.
The kid didn't
and he's
even
your
know
best
who,
friend.
The kid,
You're being critical of me.
Didn't
and someone
even
you've
know
known since high
MC
school.
MC Hammer was.
Thank you. Point taken.
That doesn't mean that two wrongs
so
don't make a
right. So someone that is extremely close to you for a heck of a lot longer than you and I've been doesn't know people that you think walk on water like Lemmy and Peter Dinklage does. Am I getting that right?
I promise to you.
I don't even know how to spell Dinklage.
I promise.
D-I-N-K-L-I-G-E.
Yes, correct.
Perfect.
I promise I won't say anything to him about Peter Dinklage, and you can ask him on there. I don't know. I don't know if the kid will know that.
I'll put $5 on the fact that he does not know who he is.
If I was going to bet on the kid, I would probably say yes. Now, Vince Conde, friend of the show, absolutely knows who Peter Dinklage is. Most people right now know Peter Dinklage is probably, I mean, I'm sure he's one.
Behind the Rock, number two, right? Come on. Never heard of him.
Didn't Peter Dinklage just win an Emmy?
I think so. Yeah, I think he did.
I know a lot of people that win Emmys. What, he win it in his local market?
Yes, he won the Emmys. Local market? What are you talking? Come on, man. All right. He was in Pixels. I don't know if you watched that.
Yeah, I know. Is he the little guy?
He is a little person,
okay,
yes.
Okay, there you go. Perfect. I know who he is.
Okay. I don't know if that's still
true. Great. Still don't. Still.
He was in
Never
the Chronic,
in my
what
life
cools
did I need
Narnia.
To know.
I said the Chronic, What Cools of Narnia?
Now, his character in the X-Men movie, the last one, was Bolivar Trask. He created the Sentinels, which hunted down all the mutants. Wilhelm Pieters.
Oh, I just had one rim out. Darn it. That's why I didn't know who Peter Dinklage was. His mullet in Pixels is strong. I will say that.
And as Bob also points out, Peter Dinklage also just hosted Saturday Night Live within the last month and ruined the first and spoiled the end of the previous season of Game of Thrones for people who hadn't seen
last it. Time I watched Saturday Night Live was well over a year ago. So
I'm pretty sure he threatens in that movie. Bob Newhart is also in there. Thank you, TX Runner 1.
That's right.
It's an unbelievable cast.
You need, forget about,
And Santa Claus is also a famous actor in that. It's,
Santa Claus with
Tim
Allen?
Santa Claus.
Great
movie. Ed Asner.
Great series.
Ed Asner. You got, come on. Jimmy Caan? Ed Asner? Kyle Gass from Tenacious D is in the movie as one of the writers?
Yeah.
Do you know who Tenacious D is?
You got to get on board.
Jack Black.
All right, good.
Get on board, Wilhelm.
Artie Lang is in it. Faison Love is in it. Andy Richter. I mean, it goes on and on.
Are we still talking about that movie?
It's a great movie. I don't know how you go through a Christmas-like season without it.
Okay.
You're going to be happy. You're going to be happy with me.
I told you I've seen the whole movie, just never all at once.
Yeah, but you have to go on the emotional roller coaster. You can't, when they land in Central Park, you got to go through the whole thing, man.
I am very rarely unless it's a Cavs game that's meaningful, or at a point in a game where the Cavs are playing that's meaningful, because I don't dare watch the first three quarters. It's useless. Or a Buckeye game, or coming home in between the pregame show and watching some of the Browns. I'm very rarely in control of the remote, meaning the influence. It may be in my hand, but the influence, it takes me over into whatever ends up onto television. I'm just not one to sit there and just be on the couch.
So you never, like, just sit there and, like, binge watch a show?
No, never. Never. The only binge watching I ever did is when we didn't watch Grey's Anatomy at the start. So we did binge watching to catch up Grey's Anatomy, you know, because they were like three seasons in. So we binge watched a season or two.
Okay.
I mean, this is years ago.
Okay.
We don't binge watch. I don't binge watch anything. You know what my favorite thing to do is when I have time to watch television is I scour every channel, and I like finding a good classic movie or that I like, you know, any Avengers, any Marvel movie, I'll stop and watch, you know, Con Air, Black Hawk Down, you know,
like American Sniper.
American Sniper. Yeah, those types of movies, I will stop, you know, Billy Madison, Dumb and Dumber, you know, I stop and I'll watch those movies. Otherwise.
Are you a Will Ferrell guy?
I think he's funny. Yeah. Talladega Nights, love Talladega Nights.
Shake and Bake.
Shake and Bake.
I think that everybody
old
should
school,
sit
love
down.
Old school.
I want everybody in the Wilhelm family to sit down and watch The Elf this Christmas season, and then
we'll see.
You guys can thank me, and I'll say no thank you. You're welcome.
Okay.
He thinks syrup is a food group, man.
I understand.
Isn't it?
Duh. He loves a revolving door. He loves working in the mailroom.
Singing in the shower.
She sings in the shower.
I know. He sings with her.
He does.
I've seen that part. See, I've seen the movie.
Okay. All right. Good. And the guy who runs the department store is like, it's almost too good. Somebody's gunning for my job when he decorates it for Santa coming. You don't smell like Santa. You smell like beef and cheese. All right. We'll be back with more CBD. 216-578-0850. Call us up. Paul Bazier from PredictionMachine.com. 2 o'clock. Talking about the best draft in the 2016 NFL draft belonging to your Cleveland Browns. Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Dino. We'll go back to the phone lines now. We've got Jim in Akron with us. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Good. How you doing?
All right. First of all, Matt, I want to thank you for all your work you do with the cancer cruises.
Thank you, man. It's. I mean, we raise a lot of money for a cause that touches everyone.
Oh, yeah. This Saturday, I'll be walking in my 15th Relay for Life.
Very cool. Awesome.
For the first 5 years I had a team, they decided they didn't want to do it anymore. I took it personal because I was a caregiver for my grandmother, and I decided to become the one-man team. Wanted to prove that, you know, if you want to make a difference, you can. I got married, and on our one-month wedding anniversary, found stage 4 ovarian. And we were married 9 months and 3 days when she passed. So,
wow, man.
She walked a survivor lap a month before she passed. She always had a smile on her face, and her smile still lights up my heart. But on a lighter note, when it comes to the Browns, you know, I'm excited about what we're doing. You know, let all these national guys hate on us, because I really think we're going in the right direction, and I think we have a lot of young, hungry guys, got walk-ons that work their ways into being starters and earning scholarships, and you've got the undersized receiver that, you know, that's built like a bodybuilder that just makes plays. I think we're heading in the right direction, and I don't know if we can expect to make the playoffs the first year, but I think we're going to make strides, you know.
Yeah, I think we're looking – you're exactly right. I think we're looking – to make strides. I think we're looking to see kind of progress from this team. And if we can see that, we're going to be very, very happy going forward. All right, when we come back, Paul Bazier from PredictionMachine.com wrote an article for his website and said the Browns picked up the most wins as a result of their draft class. This is an unbelievable website, PredictionMachine.com. We'll talk to him about that. Also, it's Tuesdays with Grib, Sir Andrew at 2:30 on CBD.